Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Talking with Heroes talk show program. I am Bob Calvert, the founder of Talking with Heroes, and your host for this program. I always like to start out the program by giving a little information to those listening for the first time, just really brief history. We've been on the air now since December 2005. We began with an audio program like we're doing now over the Internet, and then from 2006 to 2011, we made 5 trips to Iraq, 3 to Afghanistan, filming and doing interviews inside the wire, going out on missions. A lot of what we did was outside the wire, going into the local communities, and our focus really was them telling their stories that weren't being heard across America, including the progress, the positive stories. We were in schools and hospitals and road construction projects, talking to young people and families, and it was an amazing experience. What's really interesting is the last trip was late 2011. Our YouTube page, where we have all the footage, all unedited footage, I checked yesterday, and we're at 293,938 who have watched one or more programs. The exciting thing that to me is I've had no money for advertising. I'm back here in the U.S. living on a fixed income, you know, and it's just spreading so fast. It seems to have taken off just in the last 6 months. Every month seems to be more and more. So we're really excited about that. But since that last trip, I had to go back to an audio program due to health reasons. And part of that time, over 11 months now, we've reached a strategic partnership with a fast-growing alliance of military support and veterans groups here in the United States, called R4 Alliance. It's www.4alliance.org. And so far, I've helped create programs for 45 of these organizations, and almost all of them are led by veterans. Veterans helping veterans. And what's really fascinating is most of it is all kinds of different ways of recreational therapy. Amazing how it's helping our veterans here in the United States. Anyway, so that's what we've been doing. But we're back to also doing call-in programs like we're doing here. We've been working for a little while now with the 3rd Brigade Combat Team, 25th Infantry Division, based out of Schofield Barracks. And we've heard a little bit about in previous programs about the specific campaign, the Pacific Pathways going on, where our Army soldiers are out there training with and going on to missions with and just working with local militaries in different countries in the Pacific area. And so tonight we're going to hear a lot more about that, specifically calling coming in from a country I loved going to back in the 80s, Australia. Oh, I had a ball out there. It was really, really great. The people were great. So I'm excited to have a call coming in right now with Colonel Scott Kelly, 26 years of service in the United States Army, and Lieutenant Colonel James McGann with 23 years of service with the Australian Army. So I want to welcome both of you gentlemen. Thank you each for your service. So why don't you all get started and tell the American people and people in Australia that are listening a little bit about your backgrounds in the military.
Okay, Bob, this is Scott Kelly here, the American officer. You'll probably be able to tell the difference here when we talk in a second. But just for everybody up front, I got to thank you, Bob, for your tremendous work you've done over the last decade, helping connect soldiers and their families with the broader U.S. community, helping to tell the story of soldiers and the tremendous sacrifice and efforts that our military service members do, and I'm really grateful for that, and excited to get to be a part of this continuing relationship that you have with our brigade. 26 years seems way too long for me. I don't remember it taking or being in that long, but I joined the Army right out of high school. I was an 11 Bravo enlisted soldier with the 101st. Ended up going back to the service academy. And then after commissioning, I've been an infantry officer ever since, working with the 101st, the 82nd, and then a bit of time working with the special operations community. And finally made it to Hawaii, probably the best duty station the Army can give you. It took me 20-plus years to get out here, but arrived last summer and took command in June of the 3rd Infantry Brigade for the 25th ID. And so I've spent the last year just training the brigade and really just taking it to a new level. It's a very high-performing organization when I came in, but we've really been able to take it to the next level. And as I think your folks, your listeners that recall last time I was on, we went to JRTC in May. Just a fantastic training opportunity that was. We were able to get guys out on a little bit of leave. And then we punched out here to Pacific Pathways, which Pacific Pathways will, for us, will involve this trip in Australia, which will be about 5-6 weeks total, and then a few weeks in Indonesia and then in Malaysia. But the great thing today is the partnership we have here in Australia. Obviously, it's 100-plus years old. We've been fighting and serving side-by-side with the Australian partners for a long time, going back many, many decades to World War One, World War Two, and on beyond that even. And it it really resonates here when you come in. And you know, to your point, Bob, with the great time you said you had here in Australia in the 80s, I think my soldiers would echo that same sentiment here. Getting one to experience a new culture in a new country, you know, seeing kangaroos and dingoes and all kinds of wildlife we don't have back in the U.S. But then, most importantly, we've had the opportunity to really work beside some absolute professional soldiers, from the youngest guys to their very senior officers. They really are highly disciplined and very well trained, and not only that, they're just good partners for us. So, if it's all right with you, sir, I'm going to turn it over to my deputy commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Jim McGann, who is with the Australian Army. He was he's on loan to me to be my deputy brigade commander during this exercise. So, Bob, if you don't have any questions or anything, I'm going to hand it over to Jim and let him tell a little bit about himself and his service.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Colonel Kelly, and welcome to the program, Lieutenant Colonel McGann.
Thanks, Bob. Thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to chat on your program. A little bit about myself, and excuse the accent, I hope your listeners can understand it. I was born and bred in the island state of Australia called Tasmania, and many of your listeners would probably associate that state with the Tassie Devil, which is made famous through the Warner Brothers cartoon. As you correctly identified, I joined the Army 23 years ago. I enlisted into the Army Reserve, and I spent 3 years as a private soldier there, soldiering down in Tasmania. I loved it so much that I decided to make it a full-time career. And back in 1995, I enlisted into the regular Army and underwent officer training at our Royal Military College, which is located in our capital, Canberra. After graduating from there, I was posted into the Infantry Corps. And I've done a number of infantry and what we call staff-based postings, which has culminated over the last 2 years with commanding a battalion down in Sydney.
That's great. Appreciate you sharing that, sir. You know, I was going to say, the only difference I really noticed in Australia was what you mentioned, the accent, but the other one was we drive on different sides of the road.
Yeah, that's Bob. That's very true. We've had to give some quick driving lessons to some of the U.S. soldiers here, but they've mastered it very, very well.
Absolutely, I'm sure they are. Well, why don't we get started, if you don't mind, and talk a little bit about, maybe both of you can talk about Operation Hamel Exercise, how it went, how did you balance real world implications and you know, national exercise results.
Okay, Bob. Yeah, so for everyone's awareness, there's an exercise called Talisman Sabre. It's a very large joint exercise. It involves like a three-star level headquarters, large naval forces, Marine, very broad, touches continental U.S. all the way out to Darwin, certainly down here in Rockhampton area. And Hamel is the kind of on the ground. That Talisman Sabre is really a CPX, we call it, a command post exercise. So it's really primarily all virtual, meaning it's headquarters that are, I hate to say playing video games, but that's kind of the best analogy I can give probably to the audience out there. And it's, so we call that a CPX. Now there's a kind of dirt portion of it, which is Hamel. And that's what Jim and I have been involved with for the last 3 weeks here. It takes place in a place, Showalter Bay training area. It's on the eastern coast of Australia, about 3 hours north of Brisbane. And I just for the military folks listening to this, we really don't have anything comparable to it in the United States in terms of the vastness of training area. Well, I mean, there's probably a couple places for Hood and such, but generally speaking, it is a huge, huge training facility. We had the 7th Brigade of the Australians had this was their certification, if you will, and it's designed so that they have 3 brigades in the Australian Army, and 1 year each of them does HAML, and they get their certification from it. Now, I'll in just a minute let Jim kind of talk the Australian piece of how they organize that and do that. From the U.S. perspective, we had a higher headquarters here come out of Hawaii, U.S. Army Pacific, that served as the HICON, if you will. And then below them was the Australian 7th Brigade, my brigade, 3rd of the 25th, and a aviation task force, as well as a large support brigade, 17th FSG, also an Australian unit. So for my unit specifically, Bob, we came in very small. I basically had my brigade headquarters, the 227 Wolfhounds, their battalion minus, comprised of only a couple companies, and then I had a handful of enablers with me. So, you know, whereas my task force in JRTC in May was about 5,000 soldiers, here I had about 400. One piece that did get added in is so all that to say, so I was representing an adjacent brigade for the 7th Brigade, which was the 7th Brigade being the main training audience. So I was kind of along one of their flanks, protecting their flanks, if you will, for them being the main effort. And great, great exercise for my staff for a lot of reasons. One being the interoperability with the Australians. So, you know, you all have already met Lieutenant Colonel Jim McGann, my deputy commander, but I also had sustainment officer in my formation, several battle captains in my formation, signal officers in my formation, really integrated staff, integrated teams at all levels, to include all the way down to the Wolfhounds 227 Battalion Exchange Platoons. So you literally had an American company that had, you know, a couple American platoons plus an Australian platoon in the fight. So fantastic opportunity for us to work interoperability. Obviously, I'll just tell you, our soldiers loved it. They love working with the Australians. It's such a professional formation. Our guys really learned a lot from them. And that's at all echelons. So, you know, simply me being around Jim and hearing him and how they command and control their formations was invaluable for me. The one other piece I do have to mention is we were fortunate enough that about just a few days into the event, 3rd Battalion, 509th Geronimo, jumped in to this field problem here all the way from Alaska. So fantastic effort, really showing the strategic reach and capability of our nation. Boarded up brigade minus the battalion and flew 22 hours in flight rigged, and then jumped into one of the airfields right here in the training facility.
Wow.
Really did a great job. Yep. And then we transitioned them, and then they became one of my ground force maneuver elements, and just did a super job. They were another great organization to work with, and they then got on a plane and flew back, and so they've already redeployed back to Alaska. And right now, my brigade with the Wolfhounds, the 227, we're about to redeploy up to Townsville. So with that, I'll pause and let Jim kind of talk you through the Australian side of this whole large exercise.
Bob, I'd just like to reiterate, echo Colonel Kelly's words. You know, the Australian soldiers absolutely love working with the U.S. Army. Undoubtedly, we see you as probably one of our closest, the U.S. is one of our closest allies, and we really enjoy working with them. You know, that relationship, as Colonel Kelly echoed, has gone back, you know, since, start of World War One, and is continuing right up until now in Afghanistan and Iraq. And so every opportunity that we get to work with the Americans is an absolutely fantastic opportunity, and one that we never turn down. Exercise HAML for the Australians is our major exercise for the year. Unlike the US Army, Bob, the Australian Army is not as large in size, so we have to be very careful how we manage our training program. Back in about 2010, we went to a new cycle, and we realised that after our operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, we were starting to get very tired, and we were starting to pull soldiers from all over the Army, and there was no real structure to how we were training in the Australian Army. So we decided to generate what we call a force generation cycle. For those of your listeners who are aware, who are not aware, the Australian Army is really based on three manoeuvre brigades. And so what we have done now is the Australian Army has gone to a three-year training cycle where 1 year we have a battalion in what we call a reset, which is sort of a reset period or a rest period where they can undergo take leave, do essential career promotion courses and so on. Then we have then after that year they transition into what we call the readying year, which is a heavily intensive training period where they focus on what we call battalion and brigade level training activities. And then after they finish that, they become what we call certified. And then a brigade goes into the ready year and undertakes operational deployments or any other requirements that our government calls upon. Now, Exercise Hamel fits into that cycle for the brigade that is just about completing its readying year. And so 7 Brigade, the brigade that we've been working closely by, which is based in Brisbane, has undergone 12 months of intensive battalion and brigade operations. And Exercise Hamel, which started back on around about the 1st of July, was their major certification activity. And that's where our senior leadership have the opportunity to observe them, make an assessment, and then at the end certify them ready to undertake the ready year. And so 7 Brigade have just completed that yesterday, and so they're now postured after a short period of leave to undertake a number of operational deployments both in Afghanistan and Iraq, and ready for any other thing that the government requires of them.
Great. I'd like to ask you both a question, if you could respond to this. But what would be your takeaway from working with each other's army that you maybe even might implement into your own formations?
Bob, that's a great question. One of the things that I've identified, just as a bit of a background, Bob, my first exercise as an army officer back in 1997 was actually with the 25th Infantry Division. With a battalion from them. And I remember as a young lieutenant working with them back there, I thought how different we are as an army. My platoon was attached to an American, a US company, and it was sort of an us and them attitude where we really weren't really able to operate together. We did things differently and so on. After working with Colonel Kelly and his team over the past 3 weeks, how things have changed. We are very, very similar in the way that we operate, the way that we plan military activities and the way that we execute. I was actually even laughing with Colonel Kelly and some of my staff and some of the US staff on the brigade headquarters that if I took their camouflage fatigues off them and put Australian fatigues on there, it would very much mirror an Australian brigade headquarters. That's how similar that we are.
Yeah, Bob, this is Colonel Kelly. From my perspective, the biggest piece that jumped out at me is really the Australians' mastery of camouflage. This is as old as warfare is, techniques. I think the American Army, because of just operations in Iraq and Afghanistan and the nature of the coin fight we're in, we've really transitioned away from it. But the piece that picked up that I'm picking up and I'm going to certainly take back is their ability to use deception and specifically camouflage, and that applies from the individual soldiers, their ability to immediately begin camouflaging whenever they stop and to maintain a high level of camouflage, to how they do their vehicles. They have what they call a shaggy dog, which is a tremendous way of just using some burlap and some fairly simple techniques that really, really make a lot of their vehicles unobservable from aircraft. Additionally, they do a great job of working deception. Now, you know, in the U.S. Army, we obviously work deception well, but they've really taken it to a new level in terms of the configuration of dummy systems and the way that they build their dummy systems. They're just very, very realistic. Obviously, as most all your listeners know, you know, ISR predators from the air have tremendous, you know, visual FMV, full motion video type capabilities. So they're highly sensitive. They can take very high resolution imagery pictures. But the Australian Army has done specific exercises even to work at countering those capabilities. So as we, you know, have to be prepared for a near peer type fight, one of the things we have to be, you know, that I've identified from my brigade is we have to be able to counter UAVs and aerial capabilities. And part of that is just simply good camouflage discipline and using some of those techniques. So I'm hoping to take a lot of that back with me. But overall, as Jim said, Bob, we are very, very similar in so many different ways. There's subtle little differences, you know, from, you know, we call an assembly area and they call it a FUP, FUP. What was that again?
Yeah, FUP.
Yeah.
It was a forming up place.
Forming up place, FUP. Yeah. Quite simple, you know, simple Australian logic right there, FUP, forming up place. All the way to, you know, I'm sitting here drinking a brew in my hand and there's not a beer at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's a cup of coffee. So just some of those verbiage that we use both professionally and personally is really the only difference. And those have actually been just more enjoyable to understand what each other's really trying to say than detrimental.
Absolutely. I think you may have already talked about some of this, but how has this exercise increased your readiness as a task force?
Yeah, Bob, it's this has been invaluable. So, you know, I joke with people that doing a rotation to the JRTC in May is a little bit like buying a brand new car. As soon as you take it off the lot, you lose value. And I say that from, as all your listeners are aware, summer PCS cycle, PCS being permanent change of station. You know, my staff that came here with me and is here with me in Australia is not the same staff I had in JRTC just literally, you know, a month and a half ago. And so because of the turnover, institutionally, we have some tremendous learning and some high capabilities. Our SOPs are very well refined and validated. We have key leaders that are all in the same seats or have, you know, moved one to the left. And so we're highly set from JRTC. However, there was certainly a decrement to my staff's readiness simply because of so many people changed over, you know, from my two, my XO, just some key players on my staff changed out. So this exercise, Bob, has been absolutely invaluable for me. And primary reason is the pace of it has not been as fast as like a JRTC. Now, if I got Brigadier Finley, the 7th Brigade commander on the net, he would tell you it was a complete knife fight the whole time. Much like I experienced at JRTC in May, you know, he was the training audience and really under the crucible, put through the crucible. So because I was an adjacent unit, you know, not the main training audience, we as a staff were able to, you know, very purposefully work through our processes and systems so that all my new staff began to gel as a team. All my new staff began to understand their roles, responsibilities, kind of the expectations of myself and the other senior members in the brigade. And really, it was very, very good for us to improve ourselves. The other piece, and I hate to speak for the Wolfhounds, but at the battalion level, they had similar experiences. The initial pace for them was a little bit slow in terms of they went into a defensive blocking position and they spent about 48 or 72 hours there. The great thing about that is at JRTC, it was like a 24-hour defense. So any of your listeners that have ever done that work, it is a lot of effort and very little time, and you're very, you know, I hate to say you cut corners, but you're having to get done as fast as possible. What the Wolfhounds were able to do with that initial operation was kind of do a deliberate defense you know, take the time for good engagement area development, really build it and flush it out. And then the second piece of it is when I op-conned them over, I transitioned control of that battalion over to 7th Brigade Australian, and they worked directly for Brigadier Finley and his team, and they executed some very fast-paced offensive operations, you know, under the Australians' leadership. And, you know, I was talking with their battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel Kevin Williams, last night. He just could not stop talking about the value of that training event from the individual soldier, you know, discipline, mental toughness that they got from the tough operation all the way up to him and his staff having to, you know, do rapid decision-making, engaging and understanding the Australian plan and how that his intent or his efforts needed to meet their boss's intent over there. So it was just a great, great training opportunity for us all. And I will have to pause just kind of back up a little bit because I did not mention that HAML is also, it really is a joint operation. I mean, we have, you know, Marines with us, Air Force with us. We also failed to mention the New Zealand contingency that is here in depth. They have an aviation portion, and our guys get to fly with them as well as a ground portion as well. So it really is larger than even just, you know, the U.S. Army and the Australian Army, Bob.
I appreciate you sharing that. I'll make sure I make that change, too, on the talk show page so people see that. So I'm curious here. You mentioned in the beginning the three countries, Australia, Indonesia, and Malaysia. Looking ahead to the Garuda Shield and Indonesia, what do you want to build upon for your troops and staff?
Yeah, the great thing of the Pathways model, Bob, is you know, we've been doing for the last year, we've been really working hard at decisive action, combined arms maneuver efforts for the brigade, really culminating at JRTC and then reinforced here and sustained by our operations in HAML. The great thing about transitioning into Indonesia, Malaysia is my brigade staff is going to transition into peacekeeping operations, humanitarian assistance, domestic response type operations. So what my staff is going to get out of it is, you know, we've developed some great tools, some great skills for what we're doing, but now we're going to add some additional capabilities and skills as we work the system and the process for, you know, command and controlling, mission commanding, other type operations, and specifically those are peacekeeping operations and then humanitarian type assistance. Those are, you know, the staff process in terms of how you manage current ops and how you do planning are very similar, regardless at the brigade level, regardless of what type of mission you got. But there is the deeper level art and science of what is important to the brigade and certainly the commands as you're doing these other type of operations. So my hope is, you know, we've got a very good baseline. We're going to continue it here with some training in Australia for the next few weeks before we head off to the next country. That is my hope going into the other, these other two next countries that will be part of Pathways, is adding additional tools to my brigade staff operation.
Okay, great. What would you hope for the next iteration for Pacific Pathways?
I'm not sure the question. You mean like where to go or what to do?
I guess what do you hope for Pacific Pathways down the road in the future?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Pacific Pathways is a tremendous concept for just the employment of U.S. forces. What it does, you know, it was interesting. Before we went to JRTC, I'd considered my brigade to be trained at deploying the force simply because of we had several reps to these nearby islands, and we had done some training on it. But seeing the magnitude of deploying to JRTC, I realized that, man, we're really not as good at it as we thought we were. And the great thing about Pathways is now my brigade is going to get, you know, essentially five reps of deploying the force from one country to the next, you know, from Hawaii out to here to Indonesia and such. And that alone makes it tremendously valuable for really getting a brigade to a very high level of readiness, because at the brigade level, one of the principal toughest tasks that you have is simply deploying the formation, building combat power, and then generating the momentum for forward movement into theater. And Pathways does a great job of getting a brigade reps at that. And, of course, you know, you have the cultural connection. So individual soldiers getting a lot out of that, the training value that always comes from working with partners, learning new techniques, learning new doctrine that they offer to us. And then at the macro level, we cannot understate the value of reassuring our allies and, you know, ensuring potential adversaries are on notice that the U.S. is committed to the Pacific and we are committed to our allies that we have throughout the region. That is a key piece of Pacific Pathways in terms of that strategic messaging, and then it's really undergirded by how the you know, PACOM units are sustaining and building readiness by way of the Pacific Pathways method of deployment.
Great. And Lieutenant Colonel McMahon, what would you say about that? What do you hope for the future for Pacific Pathways?
Bob, I'd have to reiterate Colonel Kelly's words. You know, this is the first time we've had a U.S. brigade come and join Exercise Hamel. The opportunity for two brigades to work together in a divisional construct is absolutely fantastic, and I think a lot has been learned from this exercise. What I'd really hope to see, and I hope that our senior leadership sort of push this line, is that every year, as part of Exercise Hamel, we see a U.S. brigade come over as part of the Pathways program to participate in this exercise. You know, if Australia is ever going to fight overseas, we will be working closely, most likely, with our U.S. counterparts, and this is a fantastic opportunity to put two large brigades into a large training area and being able to manoeuvre freely is a fantastic opportunity, and I hope that, you know, all future iterations of Exercise Hamel are a key part of the Pacific Pathways program. And hopefully next year I'm able to participate in this exercise again with either hopefully the 3rd Brigade or another brigade from within the U.S. Army. I think this is the way of the future, Bob, and hopefully those who make those decisions see that this activity is a crucial part.
Great. Appreciate that. Yeah, I hope next year we can get a team over there to do more than audio programs, actually do some video stuff for you all. I think it would be great. It would be good for people to see. So, okay, well, I appreciate you both being on the air tonight, being on the program. And what I'd like to invite you all to do, and I believe this is a first for me, having a soldier from two different countries. So if you both can do this, give a shout-out to family and friends back in your home areas.
I'd just like to say hello to my wife, Belinda, and my children, Sam and Emily, and Mum and Dad back down in Tassie. I hope you're all well. Look forward to catching up with you shortly.
Yeah, Bob, I always appreciate the fact you always keep us connected to our family. So to my wife, Dixie, and my son, Scott Jr., and Grace there in Hawaii, I know they're enjoying the warm weather. By the way, just to let people know, Australia is not always warm. Don't believe the pictures. We've been freezing out here. You know, all my love to those in Hawaii, my close family, and then certainly to my extended family back in North Carolina, my mom and brother and sister and their families. So all my best to them.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Is there any last things you'd like to say, Colonel Kelly, maybe to the American people, but also the Australian people while you're there, and Lieutenant Colonel McGann, to your people, to the Australian people and to America? What would you like to say in terms of continuing to support you all with your service to your countries?
Yeah, I'd just like to reiterate that, you know, that Australians look forward to working with the U.S. in the future. We really appreciate the ongoing support of the people of Australia to our military. And I wish all U.S. soldiers safe travels and safe keeping on future operations.
Yeah, Bob, this is Colonel Kelly. You know, I had the opportunity yesterday to speak at a memorial service for a plane crash that occurred in December of 1943. It involved the deaths of 31 servicemen and women, Australian and U.S., both. And it was absolutely awesome how the local community there in Livingstone Shire and Rockhampton area have kept this memory alive of these service members that that died tragically in a plane crash right in this area. And really, I use the time just to speak to the sacrifices that our men and women in uniform make, the sacrifices that the families of those service members make on a recurring basis, and certainly ongoing currently with current operations still going. So, one, I do always want to thank our servicemen and women and their families for continuing to serve. The world is a dangerous place. It is filled with evil, and it requires good people to be prepared to stand against it. And then for the Australian people and also the U.S. public, I just ask them to continue to love and support their service members and the families, you know, particularly reaching out to help our veterans. And Bob, accolades to you for the work you've been doing in that area. But then just the family members who may be home, and then the service members who are continuing to serve. I just ask the populations of both our countries need to understand that it really takes a nation to support an army, and just ask for their continued thoughts, prayers, and support for those that are working in their defense.
Well, thank you very much to both of you. I appreciate you being on the air tonight. I know we're going to be probably doing some more broadcasts for you all during Pacific Pathways campaign, so I look forward to that. And thank you again for both of you for your service.
Thanks, Bob. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and your listeners tonight on the radio program.
Yeah, Bob, thank you very much. I appreciate you doing this and partnering with our brigade, and look forward to, I know we'll be talking to you from Indonesia, I believe, in another month or so. So God bless you and all yours.
Okay. God bless you, too. Thank you very much. Well, folks, you've been listening here again on TalkingWithHeroes.com. We've been talking to Colonel Scott Kelly with the United States Army with 3BCT, 25th Infantry Division, and Lieutenant Colonel James McGann with the Australian Army, working together with the Pacific Pathways and Operation Hamel. And before we close the program, I always want to give a shout-out to all of our men and women who have served, who are serving, and your families. Thank you for your service to our country. And to those of you who might be in areas of the world where you might be in harm's way, be safe, stay alert. We look forward to you coming back home to your families. God bless you. God bless America.